I will pass around two pictures Jung painted.
And this is his magnolia tree transformed into a rose window.
Yeah, this is it.
I just want to say, as an artist, that that is how paintings start so often. You have an image in your head, and when you go to put it on paper, it transforms itself. It abstracts itself, or it details itself. It's interesting.
That is a what now? Yeah, say it again.
I didn't catch it for
you. Oh, I was just saying that...
It's a frame of what?
This is his dream, Jung's dream, that's mentioned in the text.
The magnolia tree.
The magnolia tree transformed into that shape.
Oh, okay.
And then this is the other one he did.
Oh, it's the same dream?
Yeah, I'll pass it on. Yeah, Van Eckhorn's is it's marked here, discussing, just to show us, different images of the center and different relationships to it. Somebody who flees from it doesn't bother taking it up versus somebody who went through the dark night to see it.
But can we say something about that room? And I missed something there. And von Francis was really set. I mean, he didn't. Was it his refusal to work on this image?
Well, she took his behavior in the act of imagination to indicate that he wouldn't work on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
He just didn't want to pursue this, and she realized how important it was.
Right.
And that was really very...
Yeah, we'll see at the end of this chapter. Might not hurt. Is it the end of the chapter? Or might not hurt to jump ahead. This is the really nasty thing I thought he did. Page 161. We'll come to it again, but just to look ahead. Well, see, at the very bottom, when I saw Pally after his trip, he had gone to the States, remember, to meet with his biologist. To meet with his biologist guy. After the act of imagination. I think that was 52, and I think the trip to the States was 53 or 54. When I saw Pally again after his trip, I wanted to talk with him, but he didn't want to. He said he has new things to discuss. I asked him about his connection to the ring eye, but he didn't want to give me free physics lessons. That's... Remember all the talk about there's no one in Jungian psychology who takes physics seriously, and I'm so lonely, and they're all not interested in physics. They walk into the borderline personality. That's just the way they work. They ask for something, you give it to them, and they shoot you. Thus, he in actuality walked away with his hat and coat, and shortly thereafter, he broke off contact with me.
Is that just an over-exaggeration of being so concerned with himself? Because it seems to me like most of us are so concerned with ourselves that we are not listening to what anybody else has to say and all this sort of thing.
I've asked myself that same question. I don't really know. Was it he was just a snob? Did he have no backbone? Could he not take the rejection that would have come had he started speaking about these things? So was it a question of snobbery? Was it a question of weakness? Was he in fact in danger of a psychosis? And that clinging to physics in the narrowest sense kept his boat afloat. I don't know.
It seems like a real... a very quick defense mechanism. This is where I know, this is where I belong, this is where I am.
Yeah.
And I'm safe here.
And I'm safe here, yeah.
Well, it seems like there's always resistance when one is getting close to something that's going to have the possibility of transforming a complex or a personality. And, you know, it seems like what one has to do is
face that resistance and fight against
right.
it. And he, I mean, I certainly have many times yeah. given in to resistance when I, because it's scary. It's yeah. just kind of scary. But you know it's going to ask something of you that is not going to be easy to give. And
right.
he never, it seems like he always manipulated it so he didn't go to that place. He could,
right.
he could regress back into his, you know, personality, his power, yeah. his intelligence, whatever. So I think
yeah.
part of it is just a real resistance that he had to take in that
room yeah.
to transform it.
Yep. Okay, so that was just jumping ahead. What the author goes into, well, I just maybe would mention that quote at the top of 153, how Jung was so moved by that dream of his mandala. What I found very interesting as a, from a man's psychology, that he, the author, gives us through a quote by Jung, is about halfway down the page. The idea is that the, there's this, you know, as we've seen, there's a link between the self and the shadow. And one, this, the shadow's unconscious, it contaminates the, sorry, between the shadow and the anima. That if the shadow is unconscious, it contaminates her. Another way to look at how this anima leads it, us astray, us men astray, is in her relationship to the self. The idea is that when the self isn't taken up, the energy that would be taken up, so to speak, flows into the anima. And the anima becomes the seductress. Where the shadow in the anima, you know, she becomes detrimental and maybe frustrating or confusing. At this stage, the anima becomes absolutely deadly. These guys in politics who throw a thing away for a 17-year-old, that's what's going on. That's not the shadow in the anima. The shadow in the anima would have you make bad decisions. But when you make a decision that destroys everything, then that's the anima behind it. When it's a man involved with a woman in and often a man of power. This is what brings them down. So the idea is that the anima really works for the man's ruin because she knows he's not concerned with himself. So nature, in all her ruthlessness, says, we don't need him anymore. For our purposes, he's a waste of earthly resources. And I just like the way Jung stated it. It's one of my favorite quotes of him. That's why I led up to it. The second indented section on page 153, the conscious attitude that renounces its ego-bound intentions, not in imagination only, but in truth, and submits to the super-personal decrees of fate, can claim to be serving a king. Inner king, of course. Inner value system. The more exalted attitude raises the status of the anima. Whoops, typo. Of the anima. Cross out second of the anima. From that of a temptress to a psychopomp. Does that make sense? From a seductress to a guide. The transformation of the kingly substance from a lion into a king. That would, lion would be desire. The king would be a noble value. Has its counterpart in the transformation of the feminine element from a serpent into a queen. So the man's lust turns into love. The coronation, apotheosis, and marriage signalize the equal status of conscious and unconscious that become possible at the highest level, a coincidentia oppositorum with redeeming effects.
I forget what apotheosis is.
I looked it up and I forget it. No, I think it's the apotheosis of Mary was her being taken up into heaven and made
a deity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think it's a spiritualization.
It's a divinization
of a human.
Of a human figure. So let's say in Greek mythology, when a certain god or hero gets killed and then they are turned into a divine figure, that's an apotheosis.
Designed to.
Well, the idea is, I just like the way he put it, that if you're tied to your ego, you see, you can see how he was tied to his ego, right? The super personal decree of fate would be lecturing on a stranger. Had he been able to do that, he would have been serving a king. In other words, a higher value than just his pride. He would have been serving the needs of the future. And the exalted attitude, that would mean the attitude which accepts the task. The effect of that is that the anima ceases to intrigue men through erotic fascination and begins to guide him with inspiration. And that gives the unconscious here would be that injunction to lecture, and consciousness would be the teacher, a unification. Does that make sense to everybody? Then the next couple pages, it's just what I did. 154, 155, 156.
Are you going to be talking more about this page?
Go ahead. I wasn't a whole lot, no, but I will in the second half, but if you've got something on the first half, holler.
Well, I'm just want a little clarification.
Yeah.
Finally, in the middle, on the fourth sentence, finally the ring on affects the transformation of the master.
Right.
So when we talk about a transformation of self, we mean brought into consciousness.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure exactly why he says that. Let's go back to the text. I got either he's not clear or I'm not clear. Or maybe both of us aren't clear. I got a little distressed with the way he handled the ending of this thing. Let's see. But I'm not sure I'm right. Let's see. Where are we? Page.
He just got me all confused when he starts.
I just think he's flat out wrong.
I don't know what he was trying to prove here. I need it sort of clarified.
Well, I think it's, you know, you get this guy's a pu'er.
Now I'm talking about Van Erkel.
Yeah, he's a pu'er.
Oh.
And they don't like darkness. And what's happening now is a life is slowly sliding toward suicide. I mean, he died of cancer, but it was a suicide for all practical purposes. He might as well have shot himself. And it's very tragic, and the author keeps trying to find something good about it, and there's nothing good about it. And at this point, you just have to grieve. And I don't think he could do that. Now, why does he say, I heard the voice of the Master, wait, transformation of the center of evolution. Page 134. I'm shuttling between the text and the commentary. I'll tell you how I would interpret this, and then you can see what he does with it. I felt it was time to leave, but once more I heard the voice of the Master, wait, transformation of the center of evolution. Now, I say, where's the transformation? I don't see any transformation. So, remember the paper bag?
The paper transformation.
This is just paper. This is just talk. I think it's all talk from here on in. And I think the author just said that, it would have been true. What he's trying to see is there some hidden redeeming value.
I guess he's trying to see what could have been or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or so what the real value could have been.
Or is there hidden value in it? Mm-hmm. And there might be. But I would say when things are tragic, have tragic feelings.
Well, I think I got a numinous feeling from the idea of the ring eye.
The ring eye is genuine, but that's where it stops.
So, I mean, I could see trying to look into the symbol more.
Oh, definitely. As an image, it's very positive up to that point. But then it's left. And then everything that follows is cover up. In earlier times, one said lead turns to gold. We've seen absolutely no lead turning to gold here. It's the ring eye, not in spoke the words. This makes the void in the ring, the void and the unit into a couple, meaning the void would be the imaginary, and the unit, the real, into some concrete dimension, some concrete event. And then the next part is just talk, I think. Instinctive, impulsive, intellectual, rational. Okay, we know that there are the two sides. The second paragraph of 135. But again, see, at this point, I'm feeling like von Franz. So what? The ring with the eye, it's always italicized. The small eye, and it should be italicized. Is a unity between particle and wave, blah, 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 blah. So what? It was left hanging. It's the atom, the invisible in Latin. Okay, again, it turns into a static image. Now see, there should be a reaction at that point, because this is a dynamic process.
Well, when they say static image, they're talking about manifestation in a physical image, right?
What I read from there is that he does have the knowledge that this is going nowhere, but it is static. But that hasn't sunk in. See, a moment ago we heard evolution, and now we hear static. It doesn't fit.
Well, he explains that whole static idea later.
Well, the author does, I think.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't buy it.
You don't buy his explanation?
No, I think it's all tragedy from here on in.
Oh, okay.
It is the marriage, and at the same time, the realm of the middle, which you can never reach alone, but only in pairs. I agree. He takes it literally. I think very often you do have to reach it with a partner, but you can reach it through the two parts of yourself, too. And that's what he is being driven to understand. Those two parts aren't him and von Franz. They're him and the mystery of his life. Von Franz is just one of the players in that mystery.
Well, that's what was so confusing. He later takes this idea of pairs and makes a whole big thing out of it.
Yeah, I think he's way off track.
That was confusing.
Way off track, personally. I mean, it's the only place I really felt he was off track. There was a pause, we waited for something, then the voice of the master speaks. Transform from the center of the ring to the lady. It's a little too fast. Remain merciful. She's not going to remain merciful. She's going to kill him. And the fact that she does kill him suggests she doesn't buy this mercy plea either. Then comes the coated hat. I feel pretty safe in saying he misses the boat here for quite a few pages. I'll see if I can find that quote where she says the same thing. She disagreed with the author.
And when you hear that last chord, you almost get feeling she says.
Yeah. Again, I want to be careful because I don't want to unfairly criticize this guy. You know, I say this after 30 years of watching people make good choices and bad choices, and you kind of learn, well, this person's determined to destroy their life. You know, nothing I can do. And there's no point in trying to see value in it. And that's what I would be feeling with Pally at this point. He's a goner. You can't be that brilliant with that clear of a message again and again and again, and essentially flip somebody off with, I'm not giving you a free physics lesson. You can't do that. The self, the constellated self, will kill you when it's that activated. And that's what I see all through the end of the piano lesson.
I suppose the author is trying to give us a hint as to what approach Polly could have taken that would have sat, would have been an expression for the self. Is that the idea you get?
Well, no.
No?
The guy wrote me a letter that really disturbed me, the author. And I would have carried on a conversation with him, but I didn't. And he said in his letter how von Franz was a mother to him.
The author? Polly, or
to the author? Yeah. And how helpful she was as a mother to him. I think meaning mothering is great too. But now he's all past that and he's moved on.
Well, that's what he said?
Yeah. I could bring a letter. I don't know if it's confidential or not. Just an email. I don't know him, but I wrote him about the manuscript when I first came across him before I knew he had written a book from some magazine articles he published, and his email was in there, so I just emailed him. He sent me back this very strange email. And I just thought, you know, you haven't understood your own book. If you did, you wouldn't talk like that. Von Franz, mother, not mother, move beyond, not move beyond, that's irrelevant. Question is, where is this material in you? And I'm guessing it's nowhere. And my thought is, he's seeing his own psychology in Pali and trying to pretty it up. There, I don't fault a guy for missing this. As I say, I promise you, I could not have written this book. But I do fault a guy for being so arrogant as to make that sort of statement about her, after she probably bent over backwards to help him with this book. That, yes, it was. She was a nice phase, but I've moved on. Moved on to what?
Yeah,
and she's not the place where you are anyway. She's your tool. Why aren't you using that? That was my feeling. And he's a physicist who, I think, left physics for psychology or for religion. You know, I think he teaches theology now.
Theology?
Yeah. Mm. So that he must not have resolved some of these very basic things.
Theology as in Christian theology?
With the Christian, I wouldn't say fundamentalist, but definitely, you know, a Christian-y, light, sugary tone to it. But, you know, I just thought, I mean, I'm saying this to you guys is sort of almost like confidentially, because I don't want to tear him down. I think he did a great job, but I think here he blows it. And so your confusion is not that you don't understand, it's that he doesn't understand.
I mean, you think so often others do get that involved in their work, but they don't understand that it's their own involvement.
Yeah.
That's miscasting the truth.
And it's difficult material. And it I think it generally meets with rejection. People sort of look at you like, what in the hell are you talking about? Yet if you know what's going on the inside, we have to deal with this stuff. Okay, so 156, unless you're dying to talk about it, I don't even think it's worth really going into. Remain merciful. He says that the piano lesson shows that the master, the stranger, is put in the place of this character who says the words remain merciful in Faust. And he says, Dr. Marianus is a reference to Mary, which shows that it has to do with the feminine. Personally, I say so what.
Well, it has to do with the feminine, but it's stripped of the dark Mary of the Christian tradition.
Yeah, you really feel...
I read that, I just wanted to throw up. I'm so sick of... just reminds me so much of Mary always just be merciful. And, like,
right,
just this
light, exactly.
Nothing but light. And so there was no room for a feminine darkness. There was
absolutely
no movement in it. It just... I can hardly talk about it.
Well,
my
you heard my story about Ian McGuire in England. I was at went to a conference once, and I had the honor of sitting next to her. She's one of my heroes. And this guy, Ian McGuire, she's a dermatologist. She wrote the book on skin disease and Seven Deadly Sins. She does. You know, in my mind, there's sort of a line from Jung to von Franz to her. Then probably to Marion and Edinger. That's kind of how I would see that it trickled down. And she just done two books. I don't know why. They're horribly edited. But they're great books. She's a marvelous, marvelous woman, as you will hear from this comment. So this guy gives a lecture on the role of love in therapy. You know, I'm ready to barf right there.
The guy that's giving the lecture?
David Rosen. I might as well say his name. It was a public lecture.
Okay.
Just stupid. And she's sitting next to me, and I feel her getting more and more agitated. Thinking, oh boy, this is going to be interesting. So he finishes the lecture, and he talked about Paracels in love. And she raises her hand. She stands up. Dr. Rosen, you have just talked to us an hour and a half on love in therapy. And you've quoted Paracelsus. Are you aware Paracelsus was a man who was filled with hate? And this was the blockbuster sentence. Are you aware the most important factor for a therapist is not how they love, but how they hate? And she sat down. You hear a pin drop. Her final coup was when at the door she said quite loudly, God, that was boring! Well, you see, what you're experiencing is rage vis-a-vis destruction. And I think it's very important that, just in friendship, but so in our work as therapists, that we can feel that. That you don't squash those feelings. And I was so happy to hear her say that. No, you don't act that out to the person, but if you don't feel it, you're not being genuine. A life is being destroyed. That's what rage is countering. But thanks to the Christianization of the feminine, all of that rage turns into be merciful. But that, to me, just shows how out of touch this ending was. What is really going on at that point in the story is that the death animus is just furious, and it's sugared. And that's what you were feeling. And it is absolutely crucial to feel that, I believe, in our work. And the author blows it, too. He doesn't get it. To me, that's the difference between an analyst and a therapist.
I would suggest it's important to feel that in any work you do with people.
Yeah.
My son and I were having this conversation the other day. He's a teacher. And he's
saying,
the first thing I have to do in my class is to get a sense of who I can't stand.
Yeah.
And who, what my relationship is, so that I can consciously participate with that student.
Oh, good for him.
Instead of saying, I love them all.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't love them all.
Yeah.
Because some of them just provoke something in me, and I have to be really aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm
going to
take it out on
that's the dark
text.
Feminine.
Wow. And
that's what's missing in the text, and I'm afraid in our author.
Yeah. Well, I think it's missing the whole relationship things with people, because the feminine is always supposed to be seen as love. And
yeah,
if you have
exactly.
Other feelings, you're simply supposed to repress them and ignore them.
Right.
Instead of bringing them to consciousness and participating with them.
Right.
Which isn't necessarily always pretty either, but at least it's real.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's
sort of like defending your shadow, right?
Yeah, all right. Here it's the witch, the positive side of the witch, who is enraged when life's values are denigrated. And should be enraged. But, I know, thank God for my analytic training, but I can tell you in divinity school, these pastoral counseling classes, Well, you're so defensive. Oh, you're so angry. All the crap you'd get for having a genuine emotion. Because they don't know that in that instinct is a spirit. And that's the hardest part of working with people like this, your own rage. I imagine how von Franz must have felt. I'm not going to give you a free physics lesson.
Well,
so that's what it was about.
Yeah.
If somebody said, I wish you're like my mother, I just want to go, I've got three kids. They can call me mother.
I'd say read between the lines.
You're not one of them. I mean, I just find that icky. Instead of his colleague or his mentor or his teacher or his co-creator.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's what keeps it from being a great work. But I do think it's a good work that he's done here. And again, remember, he's not an analyst. He has not had training in this. So there I'm willing to give him the benefit of doubt and really keep these comments private. Flower of the Wise. What he does now from here to the end of the chapter is go through an act of imagination published by Barbara Hanna where the flower plays a key role. And the flower, like the magnolia tree, like the ring, are all mandalas, just to show us how it looks when somebody has a different relationship to the self-center flower ring. I don't know if we need to go through that or not. Do we need to go through that or not? I just
want you to clarify.
Yeah.
Right under on 157, the flower of the wise.
Yeah.
And he puts forth his, what he's going to help us get through here in those first two sentences.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand what he means.
Well, yes, and I disagree with him. I personally question. I personally question whether a mathematical symbol that portrays the heart of quantum physics can at the same time express the hidden goal of a transference. In other words, is that ring I of possessing, does that ring I possess the same emotional power as an image of a flower or a tree? And I would say, why not? So I think I think he's off to a bad start.
Well, that is, I thought he was trying to make a different point. He says, how can a symbol of love, well, I don't know what's confusing me.
Well, what I understood there was he was saying this is a mathematical symbol. And why did Pali Psyche pick that when it could have picked a very emotionally powerful symbol for the self, for the center? But I don't think that's a relevant question. Psyche can pick whatever it wants.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's a mathematical symbol, and it is not limited to quantum physics, it is a perfectly adequate symbol. I mean, I think the guy is really lost. That's part of your confusion.
Well, he's saying, too, that they're two different processes.
And they're not.
To say that,
right, and they're not.
Okay, that's what confused me.
No.
Okay.
And, as you know, I hate this word transference.
I don't like it because it wiggles around all the time and you can't put your finger on it.
Exactly. And it's like, I was trying to think, why is it that bothers me? It's like saying a symphony of Beethoven is a collection of notes. It's true. But it misses the mystery of that piece of music. And so calling this attraction between the two of them a transference misses the mystery of the relationship. And it tries to turn it into a quantifiable thing, but it's not a quantifiable thing. So he really falls into many errors here. He tries to put their feelings in a box on one hand, and on the other hand, he is questioning what I think is a very valid symbol, the ring. There's nothing wrong with that symbol. There's a lot wrong with the way Pali relates to it, which he tries to skirt around. So I just think he's lost.
So when he says, when Van Erkelen says, but it is clear to me that the realm of the middle is experienced completely differently in a transference than in quantum physics.
No.
He's making a mistake.
Yeah. The whole point of this freaking book is that they're the same.
Well, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. But then in the end of this whole little exercise, he comes to the conclusion that, yeah, they are the same.
Right. I mean, I think it's full of contradictions, and sometimes it looks like he's criticizing Pali, sometimes it looks like he's excusing him, but there is no clear, to my mind, reaction to the pathos of the situation, which would be, the ring is okay, Pali's attitude to it is wrong, and that's sad. End of story. Save yourself 15 pages.
But is, I don't want to make a mistake of supporting No. But not knowing very much about alchemy so far, but I want to really get penetrated. Does this work have anything at all to say about alchemy?
Well, this would be what alchemy is talking about, the production of a center which assumes the role of an inner authority for us that puts forth values and sometimes downright assignments for how to be in the world.
Does this I bring in new understanding?
Well, the I would be the, you know, I hate to use the word, but I'll say it anyway, the transcendental dimension. Where does the self come from? We don't know. It's a mystery. And that's what the I is. It's this other dimension which we can't explain, but sure enough is there giving us directions and sometimes these remarkable synchronicities that only leave you scratching your head. It would be the revealed aspect. And the, you know, the horizontal axis would be the life, putting that revelation into daily life. And what he's getting is to realize a full life is always both. You're open and you're listening to what this other, whatever it is asking me to do, and then I'm doing it. And I'm looking at what I'm doing to see whether that gives me any hints about what this other side is telling me, and I'm listening to this other side to give me some sense of what I should be doing. So it's a dialectic. Mm-hmm. Very much so. And alchemy is about the production of that center. The symbolism involved. Yeah. And then why he... the author often now gives us this flower. Maybe I could just mention some of her active imagination. Just so you can hear the difference. You know, you heard Pally sing the ring walking away. You saw Jung moved by the magnolia tree and having come to grips with those so-called lost years of despair when he was wanting to jump off a bridge. And now here's just another example. I see a white bird by the flower. It flies onto the flower, then bathes in the light of flower and flies out into the world. See, there is her moving into the self and then taking that self into the world. I am 159. I go to the place where two have become one, where gold and silver, sun and moon have united, and where man can also become one with himself and with the other. Again, instead of running from the suspended ring, here is somebody going to that central spot. This is how it looks. That's all he's doing. The next quote, the body, you must find it neither with nor without covetousness. It is beyond both. Person who is fireproof can go into the fire quietly without burning. So there is the emotional component of this process, just what we're talking about in visions. She can't go there with it, she can't go there without it. Can a physicist be fireproof? Why not? How does one become fireproof in such a situation? By getting burnt. She's about the middle of the page. The numinosum leads to the middle. It is beyond the opposite. So the mysterious feeling, the feeling of mystery, is tied up with this center. So all that's gone in Pali. The numinosum would be the eye. Um, 161, I'm very happy in our homeland in the center. See, she is going to this place. And if Pali, so in other words, if Pali had taken that ring and said, I think I'll go sit by a brook for a couple of days, it would have been a completely different ending.
Does he compare Pali's material with this woman because they're both going to die?
I don't think so. I think because she is really wrestling with the center, and where and we have an account of going to the center, and we have an account of the emotions that accompany going to the center, with Jung, despair, and her, fire. Sexuality, probably. So that's all. It's just it's a comparison text. And then we come to the end. The image of the master encircled in the ring is reminiscent of the Celtic myth, the magician Merlin, who, with his own magic, was held captive by the fee Morgaine. I don't... What would you say?
Fay.
Oh, Fay. Is that Fay?
It's supposed to be F-E-Y, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I'll have to check that. I think it's F-E... E with a... Isn't it F-E with a accent E? Mm-hmm. Accent aigu? F-E, accent aigu, E.
It could be in French.
Yeah.
But in English, it makes F-E-Y.
I'll check.
We have a dictionary
now, I got one. I'll check. Because I probably took this from a translation. So that, yeah. Maybe they kept the French. As mentioned, no, it's not about Merlin being entranced in the forest. It's about inflation taking over where there should have been dialogue.
This is von Fromm's idea, right? About comparing Pauli's...
No, this is... that's the author.
Let's see. And possibly von Franz is referring to this trip when she writes...
I guess it is her, yeah. I still don't agree with it.
You don't?
Uh-huh.
So she's really comparing him to Percival with the asking the question and that kind of thing.
Yeah, she's showing the relationship between two powerful forces.
Yeah.
And in Celtic mythology, very often Merlin and Morgaine are seen as archetypal, part of the same continuum. And there's a powerful relationship between the two. Enormous tension.
But the idea with Merlin is that he falls in love at the end of the story, and he retires to the forest.
Only in one version of it. There's lots of different ways.
But I think that's the one she's referring here to. That he's captivated by the anima, and he retires to the forest.
Did anybody didn't tell him to do that? I mean, he didn't really go to the forest, but he just.
What happens when he's held captive is he transforms the power into relief. I mean, the version that I've been reading, he doesn't go back into, he doesn't become impotent, I guess is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't allow love.
But he stays in the forest, doesn't he?
Well, he's back, that's where he lives. That's his realm. And Morgaine is very much the dark and the light center.
Uh-huh.
I can tell you the only way I know about it is one of my favorite movies of that.
I know.
Is that he is tricked and
right.
in by the what's his name?
By Morgaine.
Yeah, Morgaine.
Right.
And then he's kind of pushed off into another never world.
Right.
So that's not real.
That's the version I know.
That's one of the later versions of the story.
Yeah. But I think that's what she's referring to here.
She's talking about him being held captive.
Yeah.
She talks about this in the Grail Legend.
Grail Legend. So she's referring to the Grail Legend.
She talks about this more in the Grail Legend. You could go and...
She interprets it positively. I just questioned it.
Well, no, I think it is negative, because remember in the Grail Legend she's talking about Merlin retiring to the forest,
mm-hmm.
meaning that that aspect of the self would rather retire than deal with the power struggle of science. Remember talking about that?
I don't remember, no.
Because you brought that whole issue of science in with the idea of Merlin when we had the Grail Legend class. I remember you talking about that.
So which way do you see it from?
Yeah, that that he's transfixed.
That's an interesting viewpoint, because what Carol is saying is so is that he retires with the force because science doesn't want to deal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, rather than give up, here's what you said, rather than give up his eros, he would retire from science.
Right.
Remember, do you remember that?
I do remember, as a matter of fact, yeah.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, you have a good memory.
I thought it was fascinating, that's why I remember it.
Well, could it also mean the forest is the unconscious?
Yeah, in other words, that this side gets lost to consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
She interprets it in a different way.
I thought that's what she was saying.
No, I think she's saying...
It's loss of consciousness because it's held captive by Faye Morgan in the forest.
But she's an animal figure, right?
Yeah, that he's captivated by the anima.
And what she's saying is
okay.
he ends up just throwing in his towel and taking the hat and leaving instead of holding the tension.
Okay.
Which in other versions of the myth they do. And he transforms out of it. So I think... The way you're talking about it.
Here's what I now understand. I'm pretty sure her basic take in the Grail legend is that that is not a satisfactory ending. That Merlin ends up in the forest.
Right. Mm-hmm. And she's saying that here too.
And she's saying that here too, and she's saying it here too as a criticism.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I was hearing her accepting it in the Grail legend interpretation and applying it here, but it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So she is being critical here. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, then I think we agree. And then what I read you. He has new things to discuss. I asked about his connection to the ring eye, but he said he didn't want to give me free physics lessons. Thus, he walked away with his hat and coat to work off his conference.
Celtic myths is that the myths evolve, they break the tensions that get held in the earlier stories, and they make people look either one way or the other. So Morgaine seems all bad, she's the one who's held them captive. You know, that's just fascinating to me, how they don't allow the fullness of the character to live the more the story gets retold. You know, so by the 11th century, when these things are being retold yet again, you have these more black and white characters, I definitely believe that. The earlier versions, there's far more tension, and it's far less, they don't even see there's not a goodness and a badness in it, it's just what is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Grail legend is not even really Celtic.
No.
So, but...
They're versions of it.
Yeah.
And actually, part of it comes out of casting the mountain range. I mean, it really is the same.
Any case, I think we see the ending. That takes us to 164. We're slowly moving along. Next time, why don't you read chapter 15? Quite a few pages, but we'll be back to dreams, and I think it's a lot easier to do when they're.
What page is that?
164 to 176.
I don't know if anyone heard, but while we were fine-tuning the piano, we were tuning the piano downstairs. Did anyone hear that? I just look at your
company. Magic everywhere.
Would that be said for this movie?
I guess so.
It sounds like it, doesn't it? Yeah.
No, Gary, I'm glad he had a different interpretation. I mean, that was really helpful to see how a person's own psyche enters material and what happens to it, you know, how it gets through.
Now, see, that's what I would call countertransference.
I'm glad that happened. I think it brings us to greater awareness when we do our own work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how we can take a viewpoint that allows the tension to break.
Right. And having been pretty hard on him, I would like to just come back and say I think he's done a marvelous job with this book. So he's allowed to stray, but we don't have to buy it. And I think it's important to really observe our own emotions and when working with material and interpret them. Okay, thanks. See you in June.
Thank you.